So I hear they're going to start a new TV show around programming language design, especially how to do loops. The name of the show is going to be Give Me a Break. Hey, hi, ho, guys. Daniel Markham here with Nerd Roundup. Hey, if you've never been to Nerd Roundup before, you're in for a special treat today, my friends. Nerd Roundup is when we get together once a week, talk about the articles of the week interesting to nerdy people. We're not necessarily nerds ourselves. We do play some on TV from time to time. We're really interested in just getting back, having some fun. A team that can have fun and joke around can do about damn near anything. And so the best way to show you how to do that is just to have fun. So today we have James Greening and Greg Young. Or we like to say, old what's-his-name and Greg Young. Hey, no, James.
I just want to throw this out really quickly. I'm not sure if you knew this, but there's actually a TV show which is called Tales from the Loop.
Oh, that would have been better. Yes, Tales from the Loop. And there's one called Give Me a Break as well, I think.
Continue telling us about that.
Yeah. Great show. Although I don't remember...
By the way, continue. If I suggest you continue today, Dan, that will be a subtle use of your joke, your tree joke.
Oh, some meta comments. I got this. Cool, I can do the continuing the joke thing.
All right.
Okay, so, yeah. Greg...
Or a break.
What you been up to this week, Greg?
Mostly, and you're going to get a good laugh out of this, still waiting on my passport.
Why did I know this?
What does the government say about where your passport is? Because your troubles have had me ask about where mine is.
Well, I went through FedEx to do an expedited service.
Well, you know. Okay.
Because the government, they wanted me to fly to Chicago in order to do it.
Party in Chicago.
What I've heard from the government is essentially nothing. What I've heard from FedEx is essentially nothing. It's been going for weeks. It's really fun.
Hmm.
Oh, and don't forget, they take your physical passport, so you can't, like, bypass their service.
Hmm. I feel like you've been cheated, Greg.
I'm pretty close to that point.
I mean, I also have heard nothing from FedEx or the government in the, for the last few weeks, and I didn't pay them anything. James, heard anything?
So you could get that kind of service. Nothing. Yeah. It's usually free.
Yeah, I'm thinking for half that price, I will continue not to hear anything. So, James, what you been up to this week?
Oh, well, the good news is I didn't get COVID, but the bad news is I got this other thing. Kill me, but it'll make me feel bad for about 2 weeks, and so I'm in the middle of that right now. You don't want to hear. It's an upper respiratory thing, but it's not that much fun.
Okay.
So I was going to say, that's probably the best cancer diagnosis you could ever hope for.
It wasn't cancer, though. It was a virus.
Have you started feeling anything like a monkey? I hear there's some monkey-related things going around. You okay? Yeah.
Well, still don't love bananas that much. I believe them, so I don't think I've got the pox.
The World Health Organization, WHO, has announced that they're thinking about changing the name of monkeypox because it has a lot of racial connotations. I don't know why chickenpox is okay. I don't know. I guess we can't use the word monkey.
I suppose. Because they're part of our food chain, we can name diseases after them. Because we're not eating any monkeys.
It's true. We have cowpox.
Come on. Have you never seen Indiana Jones?
Mm, that's true.
Yeah, but that's... I thought of that. But who really does that?
Yeah, some of that was not... some of that was fake. A little bit. Some. Not even.
Just a little bit.
I knew somebody from India once said they don't eat monkey brains.
Yeah, we got all kinds of poxes. Cowpox, chickenpox, monkeypox. I'm not sure if there's any other poxes. I don't know if there's like a bird pox or a...
Smallpox.
Smallpox. That's from short people.
Smallpox.
Yeah, smallpox is...
Definitely no one.
Yeah, we have to change that to call little or little person pox, maybe. I don't know. Diminutive pox, perhaps.
Not have anything to do with the person being little. Might have to do with the size of the poxiness.
I don't know. You know, I heard that cow maids did not get smallpox.
You've missed a couple here. Mm-hmm. So there's also horsepox, sheeppox, fowlpox, and mousepox.
Ah, dag. See, somebody's got Google right there. Bam. Yeah. Dag.
Yep. The master.
Horsepox. Wow. Dag.
Hey, we've still got 2023 to look forward to. You can have horsepox.
So if you get horsepox and cowpox at the same time, do you have like mule pox at that point? Is it like a flying?
A mule, I don't know if mule would get pox because mule's a cross between a donkey and a horse. So is there a cross between those viruses? You know, is there a donkey pox?
Yeah, that's what I want to know, donkey pox.
And if it was mule pox, it wouldn't be able to reproduce. So
Dang it
wouldn't be a long-lasting virus.
Yeah, could be it exists, but just very, very briefly.
It is very briefly, only to kill it.
So I have not had donkey pox, mule pox, horse pox, chicken pox, monkey pox, smallpox, or any fowl pox, or the other poxes this week. So I've been doing.
Oh, just wait until we have whale pox.
Yeah. Oh my god. Oh my god. Like it would be like all body pox.
In Florida, we have to worry about dog pox.
Would you say alligator pox?
No, they're not mammals. They don't do pox.
Nah, like Greg said, there's a fowl pox. He said fowl pox. Chickens are not mammals either.
Yeah, but they're warm-blooded.
Chickens are warm-blooded?
Well, yeah, they're birds, dude. That's why they have feathers.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. I haven't. Yeah, you're right. All birds would be warm blooded.
Yeah,
except for the pterodactyls, and
They got the down coats.
Yeah.
So they think dinosaurs.
What's hilarious is that this has actually been a huge argument over the last 30 to 40 years in terms of dinosaurs. So were dinosaurs actually reptiles and cold-blooded, or were they more like birds and warm-blooded?
Yeah, they were tough. When I was a kid, dinosaurs, man, they were tough. Now they're like chickens. It was something happened to the dinosaurs.
Aviosaurs.
Yeah, I can't see a T-Rex with feathers.
Called aviosaurs.
Oh, by the way,
all I want to know is I do not want to go on the hunt for a T-Rex barbecue.
Nah, yeah, I really don't want nothing to do with any chicken over about 20 pounds. I'm good.
I got a feeling a 20-pound chicken wouldn't be all that great. Just saying.
It's called a turkey. Yeah, but I can go turkey size. But once you get to emus, I wouldn't know.
Did you know that you can actually ride them?
Not a turkey, no.
Turkeys?
No. Some of the larger birds, you can actually ride them. So like ostriches, emus, you can literally ride them.
Wow.
You just kind of take.
Have you ever had an ostrich steak?
Yeah, I don't know, Greg. Gee,
that's a steering wheel.
Exactly.
So I have been working.
Dan, have you ever had an ostrich steak?
I have had ostrich.
Ostrich before. Steak? You yes, ever sir. Had one?
Yeah, there's a restaurant in DC called the Red Sun.
Right, you're eating birds.
Yes, it was a bird. Yeah. The turkeys. A dinosaur. I don't know. You know, dinosaur might make some good chicken nuggets. I don't know. So I've been working on my book for the past week.
Well, then if they.
Okay. One at a
time. How's the book going, Dan?
Yes. He said, yes. I've been working on my book for the past week.
That's great news. How's it coming?
It's coming along all right. It is Functional Programming Smiles and F Sharp. And it's all about, hey, you know how to program in C#. You want to learn F#. Let me tell you how not to screw up. And so it's just going to be a list of things I did when I learned F# that most OOP programmers do when they move to functional programming. And don't do that. So it's going to be about smelling your code.
Cool.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, Dan, how many pages will this book be?
More than 50.
How many pages?
It's a bunch. I can't count that high. It's 10 chapters, about 12 seconds a chapter, 100, 200 pages.
And you know how do you get 200 count, pages of a book?
You know that he can't count over 20,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's a...
well, I should say 21, but you have to question that a bit.
Yeah, I couldn't use my thumb, so I had to do hex. And I'm like, no, it's a... I broke up the functional programming into various things because most programming smells are just like how to be a good programmer. But this is like how to learn F#. So it's like, you know, how to code in F# so that you can actually see what, like, you wouldn't use braces. You would use spacing for indentation to group your code. You wouldn't use parentheses on functions. You would just use spaces. So there's like a set of smells that you just normally do coming from C# that's not going to work. So I'm just recovering all of the little, here's what you get when you move stuff instead of how to be a good programmer. Because I figure, you know, there's a whole bunch of rule books already, and what I really want to do is, like, don't make these mistakes, and you'll have more fun. I mean, that's kind of the whole gist of it.
So now, why should I learn F#, though? That's what I need to know.
Well, I tell you, because F# puts the fun in functional programming. Now, the reason to learn F# is you already know C#, you know all the Microsoft stuff. You know, you don't want to, like, learn a bunch of new libraries, but you want to take your existing knowledge and move it over to functional programming you never tried before. Well, the neat things about F# and OCaml in general is that you can take your C# code and just do a lift and switch, like, and it'll work. It's bad functional code, but it'll work. And so what I'm going to recommend people do is take your C# projects, you know, not production, take them, move them over, see that they work in F#, do like a, you know, token for token transfer, then start taking the smiles out, and you learn to be a functional programmer. That's the whole gist of the book. So you can take what you know, you can start writing useful code right now, and then just start taking the bad stuff out, and you'll teach yourself how to be a good programmer.
Well, there's an interesting corollary here of what if we then took that F# code that you've now produced, and we look at how it would look in C#?
Yes, and that's sort of an anti-pattern. We're going to get to that a little later because a lot of people are like, you know, it's all von Neumann machines at some point. It's like, yeah, it is, but really programming is a lot more about the sort of social experience. What's the ID look like? Are the people there to help you? Is it easy to see when you do something wrong? It's much more about that than it is like, does it support a break keyword or not? So yeah, you can go the other way, but you're not really going to learn a lot. You're just gonna show that F# will make some honking bad C# code. Is what you're gonna do. Yeah, you don't want to do a lift and switch to do production code, but because you can do a lift and switch, you can teach yourself, which is freaking awesome. So just take what you already know, lift it, switch it, make it work. Now start taking the smells out, and guess what? You're teaching yourself to be a cool programmer. That's what's new about F# that's not true about Scala or Haskell or any other stuff. End of pitch. So this next article is a Google engineer convinced himself that their AI tool is actually sentient and did a big post and started trying to persuade other people that, hey, we've actually invented a sentient being, and Google laid him off for some reason.
Well, he was violating their non-disclosure agreement or something.
Well, yeah. that's the most obvious
if
one.
Did you read the article? And
I did. It was the thing is, we talked last week. Okay. The reason this is first is last week we talked about the purpose of AI, as we whatever that means, is to bullshit people into thinking there's some smart person on the other side that can tell them like good restaurants and good things to do. Well, they bought their own bullshit here. This is what else would you expect, Google? This is exactly what you're trying to build. You're fooling your own people. Success.
What I'm kind of wondering is if this guy might have had other kinds of problems, and then they decided to fire him for this and then to make it public. Mm-hmm. It's actually a really, really interesting advertising campaign.
Yeah, well, that's some next level stuff, man. They want us to think that he's... Yeah, wow. That's kind of that's a reverso switch-o maneuver. Yeah.
Maybe they're in cahoots with Meta. Meta.
I watch a lot of streaming TV, and I've noticed there's a lot of cahooters. A lot of cahooting. with the Kahooters online. You just once they start the Kahooting, problems begin at that point. Okay.
Oh, there's no stopping it. Yep.
Yeah, I made a promise to my mother never to Kahoot after 10 at night, especially. But I stay away from Kahooting in general. So this next article is a comment on the Google article. It says, "Stunning transcript proves that GPT-3 may secretly be a squirrel."
Like a better article.
Yeah, and this is a real GPT transcript in which the reporter actually asked the intelligent machine, "Is it a squirrel?" And it looks to me like it's admitting to being a squirrel. So it's maybe that's the secret that they're trying to keep from us.
Well, and when you think about how many squirrels there are.
Yeah. Yeah, you could make one like intelligent, we wouldn't know.
Well, and we'd be really risking that this might be a global domination theory.
Yeah. And think of all the normal squirrels going to be out of work now. People don't talk about that. Yeah.
Yep. All those squirrel cages are not going to be rolling around anymore because they're busy showing off their intelligence.
Yeah, there was a Nick and Morty about that with this. I think it was squirrels. It said, "Don't mess with the." Have you guys seen the "Don't mess with the squirrels" thing? Okay, I'm going to have to post that after we do this. There was a Nick and Morty. They traveled different universes, and they went this one universe, and the older guy said, "Hey, whatever you do, don't look at the squirrels." Okay, I'll post this later. You'll like it. Okay, so next is CRISPR. New CRISPR-based map ties every human gene to its function, which sounds incredibly, like, awesome. But what they actually did was take genes out and looked at what fucked up, which is a completely opposite thing. It doesn't really tell you what it does. It tells you, hey, if we don't have this, you don't have a nose or something.
Sounds like the way they might approach a problem like that, considering that they have no idea what any of the stuff is.
Yeah, so they still don't really know. Is the long and short, but they just know that, hey, this hurts. Well, this hurts a lot. Hey, don't do that.
I do have a bit of an ethical issue with treating humans as if they were a piece of code.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, that struck me too. It's like, okay, what could possibly go wrong with this? They're in their head around in the DNA. Nothing, of course.
I think there's a larger movement to think of everything that's complicated as being some sort of computer program. And I think it's because people just don't understand programs. So it's like, hey, it must be like a computer program. It's like, well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, everything's kind of like a computer program, sure.
Except when it's not,
yeah.
Really fun examples for that are when you have computer programs that are not like computer programs.
They're like intelligent species. Squirrels.
Yeah, yeah. What this show needs is a break. That was like a subtly put in that joke from earlier.
Continue.
Okay.
Continue, Dan.
But don't bump. Okay, so next article is New Yorker. It says... hey, we need something like a coffee mug, like a Fred Egg McMahon guy, you know. This is a CIA story where some guy acted like an asshole, and so CIA basically is outing all their dirty laundry in court in Virginia, and it's making for like quite a soap opera. And if you're interested in that kind of stuff, it was like, oh my god, this is like really crappy stuff.
So
I was trying to get to the end of this article. Way too long.
I noticed a very fine detail in this article that probably most would not notice. There was a quote inside of the article. "I was sick to my stomach," Karen, the OSB supervisor, later recalled. And what the hell? The supervisor is named Karen?
I noticed that Karen thing. Yeah. Of course her name is Karen.
Several programs were named for brands of whiskey. Wild Turkey, Lafroig. Yeah, it just does this.
Ardbeg. Some of my favorites.
There was a further comment that was interesting in this, which is, In a statement, WikiLeaks suggested that the person who shared the intelligence wished to initiate a public debate about the use of cyber weapons. But WikiLeaks has also recently shown a willingness to be a mouthpiece for foreign intelligence agencies.
Yeah, I'm going to start.
That's not a small accusation there. That is a...
Yeah.
They literally just called WikiLeaks a mouthpiece for intelligence agencies.
Right. This is all part of a large butthurt campaign from the U.S. intelligence establishment. And the thing is it's not that WikiLeaks is right or wrong. And they may be being used by several different intelligence agencies, but it's just more of the law, you know, hey, they showed people we were stupid, so let's hurt them. A lot more of that going on. Having said that, I'm not a fan of Assange. I think he's way too much of an egotist for me. Snowden would be my guy.
Wait, does Snowden still exist?
You don't hear a lot about him since the invasion of Ukraine. I think he wants to continue.
Is that where he went to?
Pretty close. Yes, his motives. You know, actually, I read something about him about a month ago. He kicked off some kind of conference. He's doing this sort of gratuitous, you know, keynote speaks, speaking online and stuff. He's still the guy. Okay, so this week we got some cool science nerdiness. Seattle startup is due to launch a fusion reactor into space in the next 5 years. Not 20 years, not 10 years, 5 years to launch a fusion reactor into space.
I'm sorry, I've dealt with startups for way too long to believe anything that's been written there.
I don't believe any of this, but it's really cool, and it's got a cool diagram. So that's the important thing.
Yeah, it does have a diagram, yep.
Oh.
So
it's interesting that they note the first line is, practical fusion is famously always 10 years in future. And these guys have that time, so they're making some progress.
Yes, I guess that's kind of my point. The bullshit has, like, the window of bullshitability is, like, decreasing. Eventually, it'll be like, hey, we got this next week. And then they'll be lying, too, but, you know, you run out of time. It's what is it, Zeno's startup. Zeno's part
no, I'm guessing that we're going to end up finding that there is a point where it no longer will continue to collapse because it's not worth my time going after stupid money in order to get it for 1 week.
I think what will happen is that it'll be like life. I think here's how the alien life discussion is going to go. Like, we'll have it in 50 years, we'll have it in 40 years. And then at some point, it'll be like, well, we already knew that a year ago. Well, that's already common knowledge. And so what they're going to do is like, oh, yeah, we already could do fusion like that. We just couldn't do it in a good way or something. They'll just cross, the bullshit will just cross right over to like, oh, yeah, everybody knows that. So this is cool. I thought this was cool because 5 year time span, because there's this inertial electrostatic confinement system I'd never heard of before, which sounds awesome, and it's cheap.
I'm pretty sure they named that, which is why you never heard of it before.
That's a cool name, though, isn't it? IEC, and that was from a 15-year-old PhD thesis, so it was named 15 years ago. Yeah, it's the Orbitron. They're calling avalanches Orbitron.
The wire down here.
What'd you say?
Or is it spit out? How do they get the wires down here?
Well, I think that's the thing, is that they build it, they shoot it into space, and they say, hey, it must be working. It's in space now.
Yeah, okay. Give me some wires. Let's plug her in.
That's a separate project, James. It's the... Oh, you want power from this.
Oh, okay.
This project is to shoot a reactor into space. So whatever they do, it's not like... Hey, look, it's in space.
I thought yes. There's a practical reason for it.
You're new to this startup thing, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've always worked for a living.
Yeah, I think the key phrase here is they raised like hundreds of millions of dollars. That is the key phrase. Now, I really think there's
something. $25 billion? What is this?
Yeah, I see that. I saw that too.
So, oh,
if you read down to the end, it's $5 billion. Read down to the end. The guy says, you know, there are a lot of problems. They talked to a physicist who's a skeptic. He said, but you know, if nothing else, they're going to come up with this really cool way of making neutrons that we haven't done before. It's going to be cheap and easy, and maybe they're going to like come up with some kind of useful neutron thing. So who knows?
Hmm.
Not my money.
And there's that'd a gold be nice. Yep. Well, it might be your money.
That's stardom. So here we have a picture of a chess set. And why some developers don't believe in best practices, there's nothing really wrong with this essay, except for the fact that we continue to argue about, do we do best practices or not, which seems to me to be a sort of a stupid argument. Like, do you shake hands? Do you believe in washing your hands after you're getting, it's like, best practices are just things you do. They're not magic.
Well, to be fair, shaking hands is not a best practice.
Yeah, it is in Western. So when you meet somebody, you shake their hands. That's a best practice.
No, that's a culturally accepted practice.
Yes, that is.
And there is nothing better or worse about shaking hands as opposed to hugging, or if you go to French culture, even kissing on the cheek, or.
That's true. It is a cultural best practice. My point being is that the culture establishes that if you shake hands, it beats, you know, doing tonsil hockey with some random girl you meet on the street, that's not a good idea.
Oh my God. I need to rethink many decisions.
No, the cultural best practices are just, hey, you know, you can shake hands or the whatever you do, but it's a sort of default thing you do that most people say, most people think that's okay.
No, I have to say, one of the weird things for me when I've been abroad is when you come into a culture and a man kisses you.
Yeah, usually got a picture for that.
It isn't your brother?
It's your brother. I don't know.
No. Your brother, even in the U.S., almost
and kiss
never
me. He gives me a hug.
You.
Yeah.
You know?
I have.
He might be doing other things, but he's normally not kissing you.
I will kiss my.
Were you in a different country, or were you in Key West?
It's funny, my oldest son the other day, I guess it was about 10 years ago, he's like, Dad, when did you become such a hugger? I'm like, well, you know, kid, I'm getting old. Either I'm become like cranky old asshole or like the guy who gets weepy all the time. I went for the weepy all the time guy because it's just, I don't want, you know, the old asshole thing's just too easy. So I'm a hugger. So yeah, this is the best practices are all right.
But Dan, what would you do if you came over to Europe? And it might not even be Europe. Let's even go a little bit further. It could be possibly Middle East. And you were going to be doing a talk at the conference. And there was the guy who was going to be setting you up before your talk.
Yeah.
And then you got everything ready. Your microphone works. Yeah. Everything's good. And he gives you a kiss.
Yeah, I know. This is... I guess it's kind of what you're making my best practice point, game. The best practice point is never a discussion about what is the absolute best thing to do. It's a discussion about what's some sort of randomly agreed upon social thing we said we're going to do just as a default practice. And that's a different statement than this is always right. So people want to argue about best practice in coding because they want to say, well, nothing's ever always right. So, yeah, nothing's ever always right. But that's really not what they mean by best practice. And Greg, hey, the dude wants to do, you know.
Well, there's been words against best practices for 20 years, at least, yes. You know, in software development, because they change. So how could it be best if something can, you know, it's best known today or best that works for me? Or, but, you know, learning from other people is kind of important. Otherwise, we all start back, you know, before, where do we start? Well, standing around waiting for a fire to get lit spontaneously by lightning. Yeah. And cook dinner.
Yeah, you're right. I think what people are reacting to is really sort of the dogmatism they're hearing instead of actually whether it's a generally good idea or not. What they're really saying, people are really saying this is a generally good idea. Other people are saying, don't tell me what to do. Okay, I get that discussion. I had the same discussion when I was 15. I got it. I mean, it's a good point there. I mean, I tell you, to be honest, you know, the Bobster, Uncle Bob here, pissed the hell out of me with his TDD talk 20 years ago. And because he did, I took the time to figure out exactly where TDD worked and where it didn't. And it led to a great adventure on, like, edge cases and software development and all that stuff. But you just don't start with, hey, this person's being mean to me, because you're not growing from that experience at all, right? It's just
bullshit. Well, there's a song that's highly related to this.
Okay.
Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me.
I don't remember dancing that.
Got catchy lyrics.
Is that a Bee Gees?
What the tune sound like?
Yeah, I know. It's the Beatles did that. It was on the White Album, maybe. Well, there was a F.U. song. I can't... gosh, what was that? Wow. Now it's going to be stuck in my head. Ah, dang it.
Are you actually going to have the song stuck in your head, or the name of the song
There's a song that has F.U. as the punchline. I can't remember the name of the song. It's probably the name of the song. I don't know. I'll figure that one out, too. I'm not going to sing.
It's actually Killing in the Name.
That's the name of the... okay. Green Day, maybe? You know who did it?
No, I think it was Rage Against the Machine. Now I need to look it up. Rage
Against the Machine. Oh, wow. They're still around. They're not at the nursing home yet.
Yes, it was Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, my God. Gee, whoa. That's 10 points for Gryffindor. Excellent. Wow. You know what? That might be the song. I'm going to play it later. Okay, so this, like I said, we have some cool science stories. This next one is dark black hole was found wandering the Milky Way. So they find most black holes because they're eating gas and emit gamma radiation, blah, blah, blah. Well, they finally found one just simply because of the lensing it did as it passed. And it's like within like a couple thousand light years of us. So this is saying there may be 100 million solitary black holes in our Milky Way, which... I thought maybe like 6 or 7, not 100 million. That's amazing.
It's a lot. But then the galaxy is pretty big.
The galaxy is a big place. It's 25,000 light years top to bottom, I think 100,000 across. It's big.
Isn't it 100? Yeah.
It's in the thousands. Yeah.
So this thing going... through and lensing the things behind it, huh?
Yes. Cool. So I guess, you know, the really cool thing
I would have read this, except that New Yorker article was too long.
I admit, I stopped about halfway through, started skimming the New Yorker. It got into soap opera kind of stuff. The thing here is that now we're hearing in the last year, there may be hundreds of millions of planets without suns that are wandering around. Now we're hearing hundreds of millions of black holes wandering around. So, this model we have with like the solar system and then like being another solar system, it actually may be more about things floating around between solar systems than it is. We may have it all backwards. Pretty, pretty cool. Now we'll take a break from that article to go to this next one. Charles Petzold announces Code second edition. Have you, any of you guys read Petzold's Code first edition?
Yes.
Excellent book.
No.
It's highly recommended. It's basically him explaining how we got to programming.
Cool.
Yeah, I love these books that sort of start with the dark mass of the universe and end up with like flying cars. This is one of those books. He manages to do the whole thing. And you're like, oh, wow, this is how computers work. To be honest, I hate to say it, I like this first book, if I remember correctly, better than I like Gödel, Ussher, and Bach, which was another one of these, like, does-everything books. This is a good programming book. Any of you guys been watching For All Mankind on, I think, Apple?
Wow.
Okay, this is... Okay, you got... If you... Any people out there... For All Mankind is a sci-fi series made by Ronald Moore, the guy who did Battlestar Galactica. And it's basically, what would happen if we actually kept going with the moon race. So maybe the Soviets beat us to the moon, and maybe we just kept racing, and how would that develop? And it's just amazing, like, oh, wow, we really could have had a moon base in 10 years or whatever. And here are the actual plans that NASA had for going past Apollo. Like, what would they have built next? Cool stuff.
What I would like to see more is the decision tree on what they would have built next.
I think the way it worked was they showed this to Nixon, and Nixon said, no. That was the decision tree. They killed the tree.
But you can imagine, when they were first sending someone to the moon, there were lots of things that were unknown about the moon. So, what was the decision tree based upon all of those things? Yes. Like, there were literally probably thousands of nodes in this.
That's correct. And they had to, like, what they had to do was focus on, like, bases and transportation, not where to put the bases or where to transport to. So, like, for instance, the idea was to continue developing the Apollo lander. The LEM would have became, like, beefier and reusable. But they had no idea where you'd build it. Like, what resources were available? They didn't even know about the water being on the moon. So there's been a whole bunch of changes. Okay. James is out for a bit. Okay, Greg. This is the subject I love to fuss about. Closures are just objects. Objects are just closures. Who the fuck cares? But obviously, a new generation discovers this every 5 years or so. Let it sink in.
Oh, come on. Every 5 years, they've been converging upon every 6 months.
I'm going to pick on Bob some more. I was telling, 20 years ago, I was telling Bob, hey, Bob, I'm learning functional programming. He's like, you know, it's all just kind of a von Neumann machine, or it's just ones and zeros. And it's like, yeah, but no. It's like, yeah, functions are closures. Closures are objects. Objects are closures. Yeah, but no. This is like saying, hey, I just figured out that computer strings are little pixels of light and dark. It looks like we have lost the internet. So, as the final article, you guys are still with me. Before I leave, I want to tell you about chicken photos. This is, I think, Azura.co. This person put a camera on their chickens and had their chickens take pictures of the other chickens. Because, why not? And it's full of great chicken pictures, great chicken stories, all sorts of data about chickens. If you want to see more pictures of chickens than you ever wanted to in your life, this is the place to go. Okie dokie. Well, I'm sorry we lost, folks. This has been an abbreviated Nerd Roundup, so you haven't lost as much time as you normally would. I'm happy you guys dropped by. I'm sorry we lost Greg and James halfway through there, but I'm glad they got to come by for a while. I'm Daniel Markham. I'll see you on the internet.